In 1940, German tanks rolled into Paris. There was an armistice of sorts. The French army had been defeated. The northern part of France was occupied by the Nazi army. The southern part of France, which was called Free France, was a puppet government centered in a little town called Vichy. The leader, who was named by the Nazi leadership, was Marshal Pétain, who had been a World War I hero. If you go a little bit south from Vichy, up in the mountains of southern France, you'll find a little village called La Chambon-sur-Lignon. It's just a small place, not distinguished by much of anything, lots of farmers, a few merchants, and yet, in that period from 1940 to the end of the war in Europe, something remarkable happened there. In 1942, the word came down that Jews were going to be registered and rounded up in detention camps and ultimately deported, and everyone knew what that meant. They were going to be deported to their death. The French police were enlisted to help register and gather those Jews. And there were lots of Jews in France at the time, because in addition to the French Jews, there were a lot of folks from other countries, Jewish folk from other countries, who had come to live in France because it was open to immigration. During that time, however, it was a small group of Christians in Le Chambon who decided that they could not go along with that. Soon after that word came down, the pastor of the Huguenot church, the Protestant church in Le Chambon, a man named André Trocmé, stood up and preached. And he said, "We are not going to cooperate with this. We are going to resist it with the weapons of the Spirit." You see, Trocmé had been sent to this little backwater town in part because he had been a pacifist. When France was at war with Germany, he counseled pacifism, and so was something of an outcast. Now, he was counseling non-collaboration with the Germans, a peaceful resistance using the weapons of the Spirit. He said, "We will resist without fear, without pride, and without hate." And soon, Jews began to pour in to Le Chambon. His associate pastor, who served the church part-time, but whose primary role was to be the director of the school, Edouard Thies, was on exactly the same page. There were those who said that before the fall of France, they had been a minority of two as pacifists. After the fall of France, they were a minority of two as non-collaborators. But guess what happened? That minority of two became a whole community. And the people of La Chambon began to welcome Jewish neighbors and foreigners into their homes, to hide them there. They were welcomed into the school. 5,000 Jews passed through La Chambon, whose lives were saved, because this community of people decided that they could not follow Jesus and turn in their neighbors. These weren't just the Huguenots, however. The Roman Catholics in the community worked with them as well in non-collaboration. The fundamentalist Protestants who did not have a church building, did not have clergy, participated as well. The filmmaker Pierre Sauvage calls it a conspiracy of goodness. You see, Pierre Sauvage made a documentary about La Chambon in 1989, and it had a special place in his life because, you see, his parents had fled to La Chambon as his mother was about to give birth. So he was born in that community, spent his early months of life in that community, and yet when his family returned or went to the United States, after the war, they never talked about that. the war and all of its effects were too harsh, and they didn't want to remember it. So he was an adult before he knew the story of his birth, where he had been born and under what circumstances. When he learned, he became obsessed with meeting the people, the farmers and the merchants and others, who were willing to literally risk their lives and everything they had for his family and other families like his. Now, it's very interesting that this appeal to weapons of the Spirit is directly related to what Ephesians is talking about today, about putting on the whole armor of God. Don't you imagine that those folks in La Chambon, under later Nazi occupation and even under the Vichy government of so-called Free France, felt that they were not fighting against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against authorities, against the cosmic powers of this present darkness? Can't you just imagine? And so the counsel here is to put on that armor of God. It's interesting that the writer of Ephesians would choose armor as a metaphor, because you see, at that time, soldiers could not be Christian. Neither could people who acted in plays either, just for complete honesty here. But soldiers could not be Christians, and yet armor is the image that this writer chooses to talk about how we begin to confront this present darkness that comes at us in the world. He talks about the belt of truth. What is truth? Truth for Christians is not a set of propositions, it's not a doctrine, it's not a dogma, it's a human being. It's Jesus Christ. Put on the breastplate of righteousness. Righteousness is not never making mistakes, it's not doing everything right. Righteousness is right relationship. Jesus described it when he said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." Right relationships. That's righteousness. And on and on. And as you notice, these are all, except for one, defensive pieces of armor. We put shoes on our feet that allow us to run quickly to proclaim what? The gospel of peace. We take the shield of faith to quench the flaming arrows that are thrown at us. The helmet of salvation, and the only offensive weapon, the sword, which is the Word of God. Now, who is the Word of God? For Christians, the Word of God is not a what, not even the Bible. Jesus is the Word of God. And so, for the Ephesians, to put on the image of Christ is to put on the armor of God. That's exactly what it meant to the people of La Chambon. They were able to put on the image of Christ when others around them were collaborating with the present darkness that they encountered in the world, turning their neighbors in. It's very interesting that while André Trochme and Edouard Thies were leaders in this, it was really the general population that made it work. When Pierre Sauvage went back and interviewed those farmers and those small business people who had hidden Jews throughout this time, he asked them, "Why did you do it?" They said it needed to be done. They needed help. "Didn't you know the risk?" "Well, yes, but how could we not?" It was the most natural thing in the world for those who had put on the armor of God, for those who had put on the image of Christ, to help their neighbor, even when the state said that they would be punished, perhaps even killed for that. Sauvage calls it a conspiracy of goodness. Even some of the police, the French police in that area, were caught up into that conspiracy. Some would suggest that after the occupation of southern France, even the Nazi official who was appointed to oversee that area would look the other way, caught up in something of this conspiracy of goodness. You see, it's infectious, this kind of love, this kind of welcome. But it wasn't just pastors, it wasn't just the farmers and merchants in the area. Shortly after the roundup of Jews throughout France, the cabinet minister for youth of the Vichy government was sent to Le Chambon to meet with the young people there. When he shouted at the end of his speech, "Long live Hitler," they shouted back, "Long live Jesus Christ." He didn't expect that. And then they read him this letter. These are the youth. This is the youth group. "Mr. Minister, we have learned of the frightening scenes which took place 3 weeks ago in Paris, where the French police, on orders of the occupying power, arrested in their homes all the Jewish families in Paris. The fathers were torn from their families and sent to Germany, the children torn from their mothers, who underwent the same fate as their husbands. Knowing by experience that the decrees of the occupying power are, with brief delay, imposed upon unoccupied France, where they are presented as a spontaneous decisions of the head of the French government, we are afraid that the measures of deportation of the Jews will soon be applied in the southern zone." They're anticipating being required to turn their neighbors in. This is their response. "We feel obliged to tell you that there are among us a certain number of Jews, but we make no distinction between Jews and non-Jews. It is contrary to gospel teaching." Did you hear that? It is contrary to gospel teaching. "If our comrades, whose only fault is to be born in another religion, receive the order to let themselves be deported or even examined, they would disobey the orders received, and we would try to hide them as best we can." There was no secrecy about this. The remarkable thing, the miracle you might say, is that the whole town wasn't burned and the people driven off the land. But they confronted the powers of that present darkness, and there have been generations of people since who have lived in regret that they or their ancestors did not stand up at that time. The people of Le Chambon stood up. It would have been contrary to the gospel not to. Why? Well, in part, the vast majority were Huguenots. The Huguenots had been a persecuted minority throughout France since the 16th century. They had stories of being persecuted just exactly like their Jewish neighbors. They remembered that suffering. And there are a couple of ways you can deal with your own suffering. One is to say, you know, if I suffer, everybody else is going to suffer. And that's the typical way. That's what Nazi Germany did. They had suffered under the reparations following World War I. When they came into power, they were going to make other people suffer. But it's not limited to that. I grew up, and I know I'm pretty old, but I grew up with stories about the Reconstruction following the Civil War, and lots of families had stories of Yankees shooting family members. And boy, if we ever got into power, we were going to make them suffer. The only problem with that approach is it's contrary to the gospel. The people of Le Chambon took a very different approach. Their hermeneutical approach, their interpretive approach, was to say, "We suffered, no one else should ever have to suffer." That, my friends, is the gospel. Our people suffered. We know what it's like to be under this kind of persecution. If there is anything we can do, we will keep others from having to go through that same thing. Toward the end of the war, resistance fighters in that area actually came in and drove the Germans out before the Allied forces arrived. But as Pierre Sauvage says in his film, after all, Le Chambon had always been free. The area around them had been occupied, but no one had occupied their souls, their churches, their homes. They had been free to follow the gospel. I read to you from "Lest Innocent Blood Be Shed" by Philip Holley, taught it one time at Vanderbilt. These two documents create a moving story, the documentary and the book, of a group of very ordinary people, very much like any of the rest of us, who, because they knew what it was like, perhaps not firsthand, but from their tradition, knew what it was like to be excluded. They would not exclude others. They knew what it was like to be persecuted. They would not participate in the persecution of others. Rather, they would take part in a conspiracy of goodness that became infectious and spread throughout that whole part of southern France. So I guess I'm left with a couple of questions. The first is, who are those people today who are excluded or persecuted, who are reviled or unwanted, that we are called to identify with? Just as the citizens of Le Chambon identified with their Jewish neighbors, who are our neighbors that we need to welcome when others reject them? But that's the easy question. You know? The question is, will we have the will to do that? The police are not going to come in and arrest us for it. But the church might come in and suspend us as pastors, might take away our orders. So the question is, who do we welcome? Because to do otherwise would be contrary to the gospel. And the second question is, do we have the will to do that, no matter what? My prayer is that we do. Thanks be to God.